Well, good morning. I'm really glad to be here with you guys this morning. And like Kim said, we'll be talking about disciplining our kids. I think if you're like me, this is what you're really hoping that I will talk about: three easy steps to effective discipline. And if that were the topic, I would tell you step one, find someone who knows these steps and ask them what it is. Step two, find out that they're probably not telling you the truth. And step three, realize that discipline is not easy. It's actually really hard and effective. There's different ways to measure that. And so that's actually what we're going to be talking a little bit about today. Just to let you know, these are my kids. Sophie is 5 and a half. She'll be turning 6 in October. And Matt is 3 and a half, almost 4. This is from her first day of preschool. And as we describe this picture, this is Sophie being shy and Matt being not shy. And Sophie was a huge battler. We picked a couple big battles with her over the years, and we kind of hoped that Matt would learn from her example, but it turns out that he had his own battles to pick. And so, 3 and a half, almost 4, we're just starting to come out on the other side of this, although, they still test us from time to time. And so before we start, I did want to say that this talk is going to be directed to you moms who have young kids, because that's where my experience lies. And so I'm going to be advocating things that there might be some of you sitting in the audience that think, well, I didn't really do that with my kids. And a big part of this talk is going to be about the fact that we need to be under grace, that God sees that there's no such thing as a perfect parent, that there's things that I'm doing wrong even now that I'm going to regret as I get older, but, God sees our failings, and God wants to step in as the perfect parent, that there's no such thing as somebody who gets it all right. And so if you're sitting here thinking, oh man, I messed stuff up, well, we all do, and God has that covered, and God loves our kids far more than we do, and so he's going to be the one to ultimately reach out to them. So before we start, how about I pray? Lord, we know that when we try to figure our own way out, that we get it wrong a lot of the times. And so I'm really grateful for the fact that you've revealed your wisdom to us. And I pray that we would have humble hearts to really listen to what it is that you're trying to convince us of. And I pray for all of us here that we wouldn't come away trying to figure out how to get this exactly right, but instead we would ask you to show us what are one or two things that we can be doing differently with our kids so that we can be the most effective parents that we can be with the children that you've entrusted to us. Amen. Okay. So before getting into how to do this, I wanted to talk about why is it that we should discipline our kids. This is a topic that there's a lot of different opinions on, especially if you look at the wide variety of parenting books. And the idea of discipline is kind of coming back into vogue. You think about the TV shows like the Super Nanny TV shows that show families that are completely out of control. And so people are starting to realize the way the culture's been going on this is pretty wrong. But then the question is, well, where do we go from here? And how do we do this? And I would argue that the primary reason that we discipline our kids is because God is a God of discipline, and we want our kids to be able to follow him. What would happen if we, as a proxy for a period of time in our children's lives, never disciplined our kids, and then they enter into the real world and they try to follow God, and all of a sudden they're hearing no, and they're hearing that they can't just do whatever they want all the time? That would be a pretty shocking thing for them, because we didn't step in when they were younger and try to set up some of those limits for them. And you think about it, have you ever had a friend that if you didn't do exactly what your friend wanted, that they threw basically an adult tantrum where they get really angry at you, or they silently withdraw and punish you because you didn't go the way that they wanted to go? Or if they are just completely oblivious of any of your desires or any of your wants because they're so self-focused and they just only are aware of what they want. Those are friends that are hard to be around, friends that are not that pleasant to spend time with. And if you look back at their childhood, you may find that they had parents that never disciplined them. And so they, as adults, are completely out of control and have a hard time forming relationships. And if they're trying to follow God, God is going to set up limits. God is going to move into our lives to correct us. And people often have a really hard time with that. And it'd be one thing if we're just speculating about what God is like, but we know that God is a God of discipline because he tells us that. The author of Hebrews says this. He says, "Have you forgotten the encouraging words God spoke to you as his children? He said, "My child, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and don't give up when he corrects you." And so the author's like, it should actually be encouraging to realize that God is going to work in your life to correct you and to discipline you. For the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes each one he accepts as a child. As you endure this divine discipline, remember that God is treating you as his own children. Who ever heard of a child who's never disciplined by his father? Well, this was written 2,000 years ago. So today we'd be like, I can think of a lot of fathers who never disciplined their children. But at the time, the author's like, that'd be inconceivable, right? Of course parents discipline their children. And if God wants to be our parent, then he is going to discipline us. And this should be something that should be helpful to realize that God is going to relate to you as a father. If God doesn't discipline you as he does all of his children, it means that you are illegitimate and are not really his children at all. Because the Bible teaches that we're not born as God's children, that we have the opportunity to become his children. And so anybody who never feels like the Lord is correcting them or saying no to them, it may be that you're not a child of God. Because anyone who is a child of God senses the Lord is not pleased with this action or this character issue in my life, and he's trying to change it. Since we respected our earthly fathers who disciplined us, shouldn't we submit even more to the discipline of the Father of our spirits and live forever? And so discipline, when we discipline our kids, we're actually going to earn their respect by doing so, and it will help them respect God, the perfect Father, in their lives. For our earthly fathers disciplined us for a few years, doing the best they knew how, but God's discipline is always good for us, so that we might share in his holiness. All right, this is a verse that I go back to a lot, because it's like, you as a parent, you do the best you can. It's not going to be great all the time, but that's a good thing. Because if you were the perfect parent, then your children would never see their need for God, because they would have you and everything would be fine. But God's like, okay, you're going to try your best, you're going to get it wrong a lot of times, but then I'm going to move in to your kids' lives, and I'm going to take over as the parent, and that's going to be good for them. No discipline is enjoyable while it's happening. It's painful. It's painful for the kid. It's painful for the parent. Discipline sucks. It's not like I'm standing up here being like, yay, discipline, this is a great thing. Even the author of the Bible is like, it sucks, it's painful. But afterward, there will be a peaceful harvest of right living for those who are trained in this way. And so the point of discipline is training. We're trying to train our kids in how to live so that they can have successful relationships. And then again, God is going to be a part of that as we're doing it, and then God is going to move more directly into our kids' lives as they get older. And so that's a big part of the point, is that when our kids are little, the main authority that they see is us as the parents. You know, they can't see God. They can't see Jesus. They can't see the Holy Spirit. And kids are very literal and concrete. And so, you know, my kids, they hear Bible stories every day. They go to Oasis and listen to teachings there. We talk about Jesus. We pray to God. And yet for them, it's an abstract concept that's hard to grasp. And so God says, well, in the meantime, I'm going to put parents in the kids' lives so that they have someone that they can turn to see what authority is like. Because ultimately, the best thing for us as adults is to submit to God's authority. And so we're trying to help our kids learn how to submit to authority when they're younger so that they have a better chance of submitting to God's authority as they get older. So that's the primary reason, the biblical reason, why we move in and do the hard work of disciplining our kids. But it's not the only reason. Now, Ted Tripp puts it this way in his book, Shepherding a Child's Heart. He said, God calls you to exercise authority, not in making your children do what you want, but in being true servants, authorities who lay down our lives. So the point is not to just get your kids to be immediately obedient to you and just do whatever you want all the time. That'd be nice. There might be some kids out there who do that. There's another book called How to Really Love Your Child, where the author points out that the thing about kids is that they're immature, and everything about immature behavior is kind of unpleasant. And so he's like, they're little kids, and so they're going to have problems. Their behavior is going to be unpleasant a lot of the times because they're immature. But, you know, we are called to exercise authority for their benefit. He says, the purpose for your authority in the lives of your children is not to hold them under your power, but to help them be self-controlled people living freely under the authority of God. This is the vision that we're going for. You know, it's not going to happen as a 3-year-old, but as you're disciplining your 3-year-old, you need to think, what is he going to be like as a 30-year-old? What am I working towards here long-term? Because it's going to be a long-term battle that we're working on. So why discipline? Because God calls us to, but also because our kids need and want it. They're not going to tell us that. You know, my 5-year-old is not going to come to me and say, Mom, I really want to get in a fight with my brother, but I'm hoping that you will say no to me because I'm going to be happier if you refuse to allow me to pick a fight. Now, they're not going to communicate that, but if we understand how kids work and if we trust what God has to say about it, then we believe that that is what they really want. They need it because they're sinners, right? Whoever argued that children were just born innocent probably did not spend a lot of time with kids. 5 minutes with any kid and you will see that they are sinful little beings who had sinful desires, and they're going to find a way to act those out. Dobson puts it this way in his book, Parenting Isn't for Cowards. He says, the tendency to do wrong was transmitted genetically. Psalm 51:5, David was saying, I was sinful from the moment I was born. Actually, from the moment I was conceived, I was sinful. So the Bible's like, everybody's born a sinner and separated from God. It has infected every person who's ever lived. A child is naturally inclined towards rebellion, selfishness, dishonesty, aggression, exploitation, and greed. He doesn't have to be taught these behaviors. They're inevitable expressions of his humanness. You know, you guys that have little kids, did you teach your son or daughter how to walk up to another little kid and swipe their toy and walk away smiling while that other little kid is crying? Did you have to teach your kid how to lie to you? Did you have to teach your kid how to throw a tantrum when it came to nap time? No. I mean, maybe we taught them some of these things for our own example. But, you know, it's not like I instructed my children how to be sinful. This is just part of being human. This is what the Bible tells us, that we're all born separated from God and with what the Bible calls a sin nature. And so that's what our kids have, and they don't care. They're not here to pretend and to put on a front, and so their sin is just going to be out there. And their behavior is such that if we just let them naturally express their behavior, a lot of it's going to be bad behavior. And so they need and want discipline because they're sinners. They'll also be happier, both now and long term. You know, again, think about that friend who's not used to having any limits set on his or her behavior. Think about the people that you know that are the hardest to be around. And also, you know, think about kids that you see that are just completely out of control. Not only are they difficult to be around, but you can see that that kid is not happy. That kid is crying out for some sort of limits, asking, does anybody care enough to tell me no? Does anybody care enough to stand up to me and to pick the battles and to win those battles so that I can feel safe and secure? Dobson puts it this way in his book, Dare to Discipline. He says, it's the ultimate paradox of childhood that youngsters want to be led, but insist that their parents earn the right to lead them. So he's like, this really is what kids want, and yet they're not going to admit even to themselves that they want it. And yet, kids with limits in place are going to be happy kids. That's the article, the internet article that I printed off from you guys. It's a little excerpt from a book called Bringing Up Bibi. It's about an American woman who raised her kids over in France. And so I don't think that everything she says in that book is right, but she's got some really good insights into American parenting. And she said one of the biggest things that she noticed about French parenting is that there's really strict limits that the kids have a lot of freedom within, but outside of that, there's just certain things that the kids are not allowed to do. And so the point of the article is when you say no, you got to mean it. And then your kids will be happy. They'll actually appreciate that because kids are just running around thinking, I can't control myself. Is there anybody else who's going to be able to control me? Is there anybody else who's going to be able to stop this behavior that the more it escalates, the more crazy I get? And we as parents have been delegated authority by God to move into our kids' lives to say, I can say no. I can put limits on your behavior for your benefit. He quotes Susanna Wesley, who was the mother of John and Charles Wesley. John Wesley was the one who started the Methodist Church. Charles Wesley wrote hundreds of hymns. So these were men who followed God. Depending on what account you read, she had somewhere between 14 and 17 kids. I guess once you get to that number, you kind of lose track anyway. So she's a person who knew a lot about parenting. One of my favorite stories about her is that her kids knew that she was getting overwhelmed and needed time alone with God when she would go into the living room, sit down, and pull her hoop skirt over her head. And so that was a sign, you need to leave mom alone for a little while. But this is what she has to say about discipline. She says, when parents neglect timely correction, children will contract a stubbornness and obstinacy, which is hardly ever after conquered, and never without using such severity as would be painful to me as to the children. And so parents who don't start early enough, their kids will gain an obstinacy and a stubbornness that will have to be dealt with, but it just gets harder and harder as the kids get older, and it gets more painful both for the parent and for the kid to deal with this. She says, in the esteem of the world, those who withhold timely correction would pass for kind, indulgent parents. Oh, look at that really sweet mom who's letting her three-year-old hit her. Look how patient she is. Isn't that so nice of her that she is putting up with that? But, as Susanna Wesley puts it, she says, I call those cruel parents who prevent their children to get habits which they know must afterward be broken. Kids who don't hear no when they're little, what's going to happen when they get into high school, when they get into college, when they get into the job market? What's going to happen when they get a job and they find out that they can't act however they want, that they can't be obnoxious little brats who demand their way all the time? That's going to be really painful for them, and they're going to have a hard time. So she's like, it's best for the kids to start early, and it's actually cruel and unloving to not provide the discipline that they really need. Proverbs 19:18 says, discipline your children while there's hope, otherwise you'll ruin their lives. It's pretty straightforward. Now, the book of Proverbs, you know, it's easy to read it and think it's this real black and white thing, that there's a right and there's a wrong. But the book of Proverbs is actually a book of wisdom that says, generally, if you do the right thing, you'll generally get a good outcome. And so I've seen good parents who do a good job with their kids, who discipline them, who love them. And then as the kids get older, they choose their own way and they make bad choices. And, you know, sometimes even good, godly parents raise kids who walk away from the Lord. And, you know, as the kids get older, they take responsibility for their own decisions. And so we cannot hold ultimate responsibility for how our kids' lives turn out as they get older. And I've also seen really bad parents who turn out with good kids. So, you know, it's not a one-to-one correlation, but we can't go to the opposite extreme and say, well, there's nothing I can do, or it doesn't matter how I do this. Because the truth is, we as parents, when our kids are younger, are the biggest influences in their lives. And we continue to be a big influence as they get older, probably more than most parents realize. And so if we choose not to discipline them, it's going to have negative effects long-term in our kids' lives. And so the Bible's like, I've entrusted these children to you, and you have a responsibility, and ultimately we need to answer to the Lord as to what we've done with the children that he's entrusted to us. Or Proverbs 5, you know, this is Solomon predicting to his kid how the kid is going to respond as his life falls apart later on. He says, you're going to say, how I hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. I would not obey my teachers or turn my ear to my instructors. And I was soon in serious trouble in the assembly of God's people. So people who hate discipline, people who hate limits, their relationships are going to be affected by that. He says, the evil deeds of the wicked ensnare them. The cords of their sins hold them fast. For lack of discipline, they will die, led astray by their own great folly. And the context of this passage is sexual sin. It's a guy who couldn't say no to any of his desires, and he got involved in an immoral relationship, and he's looking back and he's like, I've ruined my life because I hated discipline. And again, there's going to be people who are like that as adults no matter what their parents are like, but we're really trying to help our kids get used to it now and think that this is a normal thing and a good thing. Proverbs 23, I like, says, you know, you should discipline your children. They won't die if you spank them. So it's like, This is a normal thing. This is a good thing. So they'll be happier, both now and long term, and their relationship with us and with others will be better. You know, kids who have parents who won't discipline them, you can see the constant tension in that relationship. You can see the frustration of the mom or the dad who just doesn't have the adequate tools or won't use them. And so they have a kid who's out of control, and they can't enjoy spending time with that kid because the kid is crazy. And you can tell that the kid's not happier either. Plus, now that my daughter's in preschool and my son is starting preschool next year, you know, I can see the way that they're interacting with other little kids, and I'm really grateful that we got the advice that we did when we did, because I'm glad that my children can move into circumstances where if the teacher says no, they can actually listen, where they're capable of interacting with other little kids, and they've got problems, all right? We're still working with my son on not wailing on people as soon as he doesn't get what he wants, so I'm not saying that my kids are perfect kids, but you know, they're used to certain boundaries in place, and they've already been taught there's certain behaviors that are just completely off limits and completely unacceptable, and there's going to be consequences if they choose to engage in those behaviors. And so, you know, we're really trying to help. This is a relational reason that we're doing this. The point is not to have these perfect little children who never do anything wrong. The point is to have kids who can build relationships with us and with other people. You know, you think about Samson in the Bible. He's an Old Testament hero that a lot of people know. You know, he's the one with the really long hair that when his hair got cut off, he lost his strength. The problem is he was a tragic hero because God used him despite all of Samson's weaknesses. And if you read the story, you see that Samson's biggest problem is that his parents never disciplined him. And he grew up into this oversized, childish brat who was stronger than everybody else, and so he was able to get his way all the time. And in fact, one of the earliest examples is as he got older, he decided he wanted to get married. He saw some woman that looked good to him, and yet she had no desire to follow God at all. And so his parents were like, oh, Samson, I don't know if that's such a good idea. And he basically stamped his feet and was like, but I want her. And his parents were like, okay, don't get mad. We'll get her for you. And so they go and they get this woman and they give her to Samson and they get married. But then, you know, he ends up destroying an entire town over her because of another couple tantrums. And by the end of his life, he's completely ruined his life and all of his relationships because he's not able to say no to any of his desires. And you look at that and it's like he had a terrible relationship with his parents and he had no relationships with anybody else because he was an out of control, grown man, and yet with a child's personality. And so it really, you know, you got to wonder, what would Samson's life have been like if his parents had been able to stand up to him and if his parents had been able to win some battles early on? Ted Tripp puts it this way. He says, as a school administrator, I observe that most parents do not understand the appropriateness and necessity of being in charge of their child's life. So he's like, I've seen a lot of kids come through my school and I've observed a lot of parenting, and here's one big mistake that I see people making. He says, rather, parents take the role of advisor. Oh, honey, you might not want to do that. Oh, you might want to think about being polite. You probably don't want to hit that kid. But by the time the child is 6 or 8 or 10, he's his own boss. And by age 13, the child is out of control. So you see these kids who are just running their household. And by the time they're 13, they're just insane and incapable of controlling themselves. Now, this is a whole nother discussion. There's actually some teachings available on the studies at the study center on this, where I like the argument that the mistake that parents often make is that they're low control when the kids are little. They kind of let them do whatever they want. And then when the child reaches age 10, 12, 14, they realize their kid's out of control. And so they crack down at that point and go really high control. But that's the point where your child should actually be starting to make some of their own decisions. So if you're really high control when the kid is 14, 16, 18, and then all of a sudden they graduate and they move out, they have no capability of making their own decisions. And so really what we should be doing is go high control when they're little. You know, certain freedoms, but outside of certain limits, we just have control. We decide what time they go to bed. We decide what time they eat lunch. We decide what time they take a nap. We decide what they're allowed to play with. You know, things like that. And then you gradually loosen that control as they get older and older so that they learn how to take control of their own lives so that when they graduate and move out, they're basically functioning as adults under supervision so we can remove even the supervision to a great extent. And so Tripp is like, dude, parents, take control while you can, because as they get older, it's just going to get harder. Swihart and Cotter, these guys aren't even Christians. One's a pediatrician and one's a child psychologist. And they say this, first strive to earn your child's respect, and love will usually follow, not the other way around. So there's parents who want their kids to love them, and so they indulge them and they give in to them, but then the child doesn't respect the parent, and so the love relationship just can't be formed in a sufficient way because the respect piece is missing. And they're like, first, you earn your child's respect by setting the limits, and then within that boundary relationship, your kids will feel free to express their love for you, and you can do the same for them, because things will be in place and you'll have the freedom to do that. Okay, so that's why we should do it. It's really for our kids' benefit. We're doing it because we love them. We're doing it because we know it's good for them. There's a lot of things that we do as parents that we're not going to really enjoy, and that is not going to be easy for us, but we're doing it because we love them and we're laying our lives down for them. So next I wanted to talk about some barriers to discipline. First one is guilt. I feel disqualified to discipline. And this is something that I struggle with. Oh man, I messed up yesterday. I yelled at my kids, or I spoke to them in a tone that, I don't know about you guys, but you ever find yourselves using a tone with your kids that you would never use with anybody else? Or maybe I'm not yelling at them, but you're kind of getting looks from other people in the grocery store, like, what's going on over there? Or I'm at home and I'm saying stuff to them, and I'm like, oh man, I would never talk to anybody else like this, and if I did, they probably would not be too happy with me. And yet there's something about being with your kids, especially if you're home with them, where a good day is a good day and a bad day is a bad day, and you're with each other all the time. Or you discipline too strictly, or you don't discipline enough, or you don't spend enough time with them one day, and then something comes up and it's like, I feel disqualified to move in and tell my kid no because of how I failed him yesterday or how I failed him last year. You know, I don't know if I'm qualified. And Francis Schaeffer, in his book No Little People, points out that David, another Old Testament hero, was a bad dad because he didn't discipline his kids. And he argues that maybe the reason that David couldn't discipline his kids is he felt guilty about his own past. David was called a man after God's own heart. He's really held up as a man who loved God and tried to follow God. And yet his biggest failing is that he committed adultery with a woman and then killed her husband to try to cover it up. And he admitted that it was wrong. He confessed to people. He wrote some psalms about it. That Psalm 51 that I read earlier, that was one of his psalms about, man, I got problems. Look what I did. But Schaeffer wonders if that's part of the reason that he just felt like there's no possible way that I could ever discipline my kids because I've disqualified myself. And what Schaeffer is arguing in his book and what I believe and what I try to remind myself is that we are guilty of doing wrong things, but that's what God's grace covers. That God's not asking anybody to be perfect. In fact, it's impossible for anyone to be perfect. And so we have the freedom to admit, I messed up, and yet I'm applying God's forgiveness to this, and so I can move forward. And I don't have to dwell on how badly I've done and how disqualified I am, because the truth is, you are not the one that qualifies you. God is the one who qualifies you to be a parent and to do what's right for your kids, because really guilt is just self-focus, isn't it? I feel bad about me. And it's like, well, what's good for your kid here? That's really the question when it comes to discipline. Family upbringing can be a barrier. You know, some of you might be from families that were way too strict, and you are repeating some of those patterns without realizing it. Some of you might be from families that were way too lenient, and you've never seen discipline. Honestly, that's probably where most families fall at this point in our culture. And so there might be some confusion on that. You know, or it could be that you're from a family at one end of the spectrum and you're overcorrecting in the opposite direction. I often see this from families, or from people who come from families that were too strict, is they don't want to be strict like their parents, and so they swing way too far in the other direction and they're way too lenient with their kids. Now, I will put a disqualifier in here. Some of you may be from abusive families. And if that's the case, there may be a lot of confusion due to pain from your past because your parents actually disciplined you in a way that was unrighteous and painful. And if that's the case, there may be some aspects of discipline that are going to be off limits to you because of the damage from your past. Now, God is a God of healing, and he can heal a lot of things in a lot of our lives. But I think the most important thing with family upbringing is we need to be aware of what our tendencies are because of the family of origin that we come from. And that requires a certain amount of honesty, of admitting where our parents have failed. And not all of our parents can admit where they've failed. And so we may need to just critique in our own minds so that we don't repeat the patterns, and also so we don't just react against the patterns. Awareness is one of our biggest benefits here. So that we can, you know, pray about it and really allow God to direct us and to correct us in how we're working with our kids. Emotional energy is a big barrier. This is another thing that I really struggle with. You know, when my kids are acting up, there's a part of me who's like, I just don't even want to deal with this right now. It's been a long day, especially when you get to like 4, 5, 6 o'clock at night, when everybody's kind of starting to melt down a little bit, where we're all tired and we're tired of each other, and you know, people are hungry, especially in this weather when it's hot, and somebody acts up and I'm like, I just, no, today's not the day to do this right now. But it turns out there's a lot of days that are like that. And if I only disciplined when my emotional energy was high, there would probably be a lot of times when I didn't discipline. And what I've had to learn is that with discipline, it takes higher emotional energy up front, but then it saves a lot of emotional energy long term. Because what I try to do is I try to just ignore, and it just builds and builds and builds and escalates until finally, bah, I discipline. And the kids are like, oh my God, what was that? You know, so it long-term, you know, you can spend hours trying to ignore the behavior, watching the kid get progressively out of control, and then finally do something about it. Or you can just deal with it right up front, and then there's no long-term problems associated with that. So it's better to try to do it as quick as possible and as close to the situation as possible. Also, confusion. My goodness, if you go to a parenting section of any bookstore, there's like 500 books you can get on parenting, and some are going to tell you that you can't spoil a two-year-old, and some are going to tell you that you should set up limits with a one-day-old. And so there's just this range of opinions between secular and Christian, and then even within the Christian section, but I've also found some secular books are really helpful. And so you're just reading all these different books, you're listening to different people's opinions, you're watching the TV shows, and it's like, what do I do? And I found this. This is great. This is a review on Amazon.com for Dobson's book, Parenting Isn't for Cowards. This book recommends parenting behavior such as hitting children, which is not the advice most Christian counselors would give to parents. This is a scathing review for this book. This mom is just going off on, can you believe that he would advise that you abuse your children? This book does not do an adequate job of explaining the real truth of God's word for parenting children. Here's the argument you're going to see all over the place. I've seen this multiple times. They're like, people talk about the shepherd's staff and how you should beat your children because of that, when really the staff was there to guide the sheep and to help the sheep and to protect the sheep, neglecting the truth that the shepherd's staff was also there to give the sheep a quick whack so they don't fall off the cliff and die. All right, they completely ignore that part of the shepherd's staff, but they're like, it's there for protection. It's not there so you can hit your children. She goes on to say, it simply takes the advice to hit your kids and give you some excuses to make you feel better about doing it. Now, how do you read a review like that and think, am I crazy? Am I the one that's like insane? Am I abusing my children? Am I doing something wrong here? Because this is most of what you're going to hear. This is most of what people are going to say, is that if you institute discipline, that you are going to damage your kids long term, because they're going to feel hurt by you, they're going to be upset, because it turns out when you discipline your kids, they don't like it. And a lot of parents take that as, I must be doing something wrong because my child is unhappy as a result of this discipline. And so it gets really confusing as to what to do and to how to go about it. But here's the thing. If we're Christians, when do we ever listen to what the world has to say about anything? The world has a lot of bad advice out there. I don't listen to what the world says about how to have a good marriage. I don't listen to what the world says about how to be a fulfilled person. If that were true, I'd be trying to make a ton of money, live in a huge house, you know, spend all of my time trying to acquire things. And then I would get to the end of my life, and I would be miserable, and I would be alone, and I would wish that I had listened to what God had to say about how to live my life. Yeah, Jesus says it's better to give than to receive. When would we ever have guessed that? All right, so when it comes to any biblical truths that's going to go counter to what the world has to say, and we need to be aware of that, and we need to be able to discredit stuff like this. So then, what do you do? How do you do it? A couple things I suggest. One, read. Read lots of books on this. Read the Bible on this. I've got a Bible reading plan that part of what it does is I read a chapter out of Proverbs every single day. And that is so helpful for me because there's so much in there on how to parent and on how to discipline. And it's just this constant reminder that discipline is worth it, that discipline is good, that there's ways to discipline that I would not come up with on my own. And I try to absorb that. But also reading lots of books on parenting. Because part of what's so confusing about discipline is there's a lot of different ways to go about it, and there's a lot of different opinions on there. And my family is different from your family, and my kids are different from your kids. And so there's good advice out there, but I think what I wanted was somebody just to tell me what to do and how to do it in every single circumstance. But every circumstance is different, and the way my personality interacts with my kids is different than the way even my husband's personality interacts with my kids. And so you have to do a lot of reading to kind of get a balanced opinion as to what to do, and then you have to decide for yourself how you're going to go about this. You know, I think there's some general things that every family can do, but every family is going to be a little bit different in how they implement this. It's not a black and white thing. And even as my kids get older, I see that the discipline techniques are starting to change and the way I interact with them changes. And so I'm always trying to read at least one parenting book, you know, that I've kind of got going in the back burner that I'm turning to, and I try to highlight stuff and dog-ear pages so that when I'm like, oh my God, what do I do here? I read this book when my kid was one, now my kid's five, this is a completely different situation. I go back to those books. It was actually really helpful to get ready for this teaching and to flip through all of these books and pull out helpful points on discipline because I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot some of these things already. And my kids aren't even that old. So constantly be reading, constantly be learning. Ask, you know, that God would reveal what it is that you need to learn. Also, decide steps ahead of time and which battles you'll fight. All right, deciding steps ahead of time, this is really helpful because if your three-year-old is melting down in the grocery store and you don't know what to do, it's going to be real hard to know how to interact and how to set up limits in that case. And so to try to think through situations in advance and figure out, you know, by praying about it and by talking with people, how can I handle this in a way that helps my kid? That can be really good. And a lot of it comes to you from making mistakes in situations where you get into a situation and you're like, oh, I didn't handle that right. And so you can go back afterwards and be like, what could I have done differently? And so that will help you the next time that situation comes up. But also picking which battles you will fight. My kids love dressing themselves. And as far as they're concerned, you know, my daughter, if she's wearing a hot pink skirt, that means that she needs to wear a hot pink top with it. And then like purple striped socks. And she comes walking out of her bedroom and she's all proud of herself. And I'm thinking, I would not wear that. But who cares? You know, she can wear what she wants. They play outside a lot. They come back inside. Their clothes are filthy. Filthy. And then they run around in all these stained clothes because no matter what I do, I can't seem to get them clean. But they don't care. I remember this one time, Matt wanted to run outside in the backyard. And it was pretty cold out. It was probably a 30-degree day. There wasn't any snow on the ground, but it was really cold. He wanted to go out barefoot. And there were some people at my house who were, like, fighting with him about getting his shoes on. And I'm thinking, if he's out in the backyard, he's not going to get frostbitten. We're not talking about any physical danger that he's in here. Just let him go outside with bare feet. When his feet get cold, he's going to come back inside, and he's going to put his shoes on. So that's a battle that I just am not going to pick. The battles I do pick, the way they talk to each other. Now, my personal opinion, I don't want them swearing, but a couple of swear words here or there is not nearly as bad as calling somebody stupid, calling somebody fat, telling each other that they don't love each other. Those are things that are completely off limits in our household, and that's just not allowed. Hitting each other, forget it. We actually made a mistake on that early on where we're like, maybe they just need to fight it out. But the problem is that Matt, even though he's younger, is incredibly strong, and he will wail on his sister. And then I saw him doing it to other little kids too, and I was like, ooh, didn't step in early enough on that one. And so immediate consequences if they hit each other. Immediate consequences if they're lying to us about stuff. These are the things that are going to damage relationships. You know, table manners, they're nice, but they're not nearly as important as how they talk to each other and how they treat other little kids and how they treat us. You know, you got to pick the right battles and think relational consequences and not just behavior. Keep your emotional energy level high. I was really fortunate that we got a dog. Everybody told us not to get a dog right before Sophie was born, but we got a dog. And then he turned out to be a crazy dog. And so I had to walk him every day. Otherwise, he'd be crazy. And that was actually really good for me because getting outside, getting that exercise, you know, just putting Sophie in the stroller and walking as fast as I could with my podcast in, you know, that really helped a lot. But even more important than that, one is your relationship with God. Now, a lot of us grew up thinking that God was a God who just stood there with a checklist, kind of waiting for us to perform adequately so that we could earn our way to him. And especially if you're a parent, you realize we mess up a lot. We make a lot of mistakes. And if the goal is for me to become good enough to earn God's acceptance, then I just don't ever see how I could get there. And actually, the truth is that none of us can get there because God's standard is perfection. And so if we want to earn our way to him, we just need to be perfect all the time. And God says that not being perfect, that every time we mess up, every time we sin, every time we fail him or our kids or our spouse or anybody, that actually deserves his judgment. And so we're in danger of spending eternity apart from him because we're born separated from him. But God teaches that because he loves us, that he's not standing there with a checklist, that instead he entered into human history. That he chose to come as a man, Jesus Christ. When Jesus was here, he lived the perfect life that you and I owe God, but then went to the cross specifically so that he could pay for our sins. So that he could then offer us a gift of forgiveness that is free to us because he's already paid for it. And what we need to do is simply approach him with the empty hands of faith to say, I've got nothing. In fact, I've got a lot of problems is what I have to offer you, but I'm asking for your gift of forgiveness. And God says that he will extend that freely to us once we ask for it, once we admit that we need it, and that at that point we'll become his children and be brought into his family, and that he'll provide for us. And then once you have that relationship with God, it's important to invest in it, to spend time nurturing it. You know, I know as a young mom that time is one of the things I have the least amount of control over. You know, there's constant interruptions, there's constant demands, but I've worked with my kids such that I set aside an hour every day. And the reason I pick an hour is because that includes all the interruptions that come with it. But, you know, I've got my Bible, I've got my journal, and my kids know that's my time with God. And whenever, all the time, they come over and try to interrupt me, I tell them, I love you guys, and that's why I'm spending time with God right now, so I can't talk to you. I let them know they're important enough to me that I'm going to say no to them right then so that I can invest in my time with God so that I have the emotional energy to then love them the rest of the day. It's actually a sacrificial thing to set aside time for God so that he can pour his love into you so you can then pour that love out to your kids. Also, your relationship with your spouse. A lot of parenting books point out that the best thing you can do to love your kids is to have a great marriage, because then the kids will feel safe. They'll see that there's a relationship that they can totally count on. And it's helpful, too, because you have somebody to bounce ideas off of. Now, I know some of you might be single parents, and the Lord does provide for that. And he'll use the body of Christ especially for you. But for everybody else who's married, your relationship with your spouse has to be number two after your relationship with God so that you guys can work together as parents. There's a lot of times where Scott will offer advice, and in the back of my head, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking, that will never work. I know what to do in this situation. But then God's like, you think you know what you're doing? Aren't you just guessing too? Maybe you should try his idea. And a lot of times I try the idea. Sometimes it doesn't work, but my idea probably wouldn't have worked either. But a lot of times it does work. And so he's got really helpful input, partly because he's a little bit more removed from the situation. And he's able to see some interactions, and he's a lot calmer because he's not there day in and day out. But he can also back me up. You know, I have a story a little bit later, but when he came home and he heard the story, he was like, "You did what?" And, you know, my son's looking at him like, "Oh no, that's really bad." So we have mama discipline, which is regular and painful, but then we have daddy discipline, which is, that's a big deal. And the kids are a little bit afraid of that, and I think that's good, because it means that there's a backup plan for when my discipline doesn't work. And finally, relationships with others. You know, I was just talking to a mom that lives on my street the other day, and she was telling me how she's getting ready to go back to work because she just feels crazy being home with her kid all the time, and she wants to be able to talk to some adults. And I am so grateful that I'm in a church that emphasizes having relationships with other people, so that there's girls through my house almost every single day of the week. And it gives me a chance to talk to people. It gives me a chance to focus on something besides parenting, because parenting is really hard. It's exhausting. And so to have somebody else that I can talk to, a lot of them aren't even married, but it's just somebody else to interact with, and it's great, and it's really refreshing. And so it will help our parenting if we actually spend time with other people as well. Beware the temptation to excuse their behavior. Oh, they're just tired. Oh, it's just a hard day. Oh, they're just upset about this thing. Those things all might be true. And I totally have a category for if it's 8 o'clock at night and your two-year-old is melting down, just put them to bed. Don't try to pick battles at that point, because you're going to lose anyway, because they're completely out of control because they're exhausted. But if they're throwing a tantrum before bedtime every single night, you either need to move the bedtime earlier, or it may be that they're fighting you and you do need to pick that battle. And so you kind of have to see what are your own tendencies, but also what's the pattern that you're getting into with them. If it's something that happens over and over again, then you kind of have to take a stand there. If it's something unusual, then fine. And so you have to know your kid. But, you know, I'm always trying to find a reason why it's not really their fault. Dobson says this. He says, one should never underestimate a child's awareness that he is breaking the rules. Your kids are smart. They know what they're doing. They know that they're testing you. And so if you're just always giving them a pass, then they're going to take advantage of that. So here's a few things that we do. And like I said, you're going to have to decide for yourself how to implement different steps. But I also know that practical advice is helpful, and so here's some practical things. One, say no. I talk to a lot of people who are like, your kids are so cute, it's really hard to say no to them. And I'm like, oh, I say no all the time. Mama, can I have this? No. Mama, can I eat that? No. Mama, can I play on their phone? No. You know, it's actually, people are like, it's so hard to say no. I'm like, if it's so hard, why is that one of the first words that kids learn how to say? No. It's actually a very easy syllable. It should just roll right off the tongue. And I say no to my kids all the time, and they don't mind, because they're used to hearing no. I mean, sometimes they do mind, and they get really mad, but I think people are afraid, if I say no to this kid, then the kid's not going to like me. And I'm like, my kids like me, sometimes, and they're going to like other people. And so I regularly encourage people to say no to my kids. Please, for my sake, say no to my kids. It'll be good for them. If they got everything that they wanted, they'd be crazy. In fact, we just went on vacation with some of the college students that we're in home church with, and I just tell the girls right up front in the beach house that we're in, my kids are going to request things constantly, all the time. Whatever they see, if they want it, they're going to ask for it. And you're going to have to be the one to say no to them, because I just can't do it. There's too many people for them to ask here. And they actually will respect you, and your relationship with them will be better if you say no. They're like, I don't know. And I'm like, just try it. And see how easy it is. And they got used to it, and the girls actually appreciated it, and my kids were a lot happier that week. Stop, pause, redirect. This is a technique that I learned about from the book Manipulative Child, which I highly recommend. This is the idea that you catch your kid in a misbehavior and you stop that bad behavior immediately. You put them in a pause, which is a timeout right at your feet. You wait for them to settle down, and then you redirect them into the behavior that you want them to do. Now that pause, sometimes it lasts 30 seconds, but sometimes the kid will go into a meltdown, and you have to wait for the kid to calm down, and you could be looking at half an hour, you could be looking at an hour. When we first started this, the first couple battles with Sophie lasted an hour and a half each. And so you have to choose wisely when you're going to do it. Man, I remember one time I was in my gym clothes. Matt was in his car seat. We're like, let's go. We got into a stop, pause, redirect. And 45 minutes later, I'm strapping Matt out of the car seat. I'm trying to nurse him while she's melting down at my feet. And it's like, you know, but when you pick the battles at the right time, the length of time will gradually decrease. and they'll learn that this stop, pause, redirect is a real thing. I actually kind of forgot about it. And then as we were trying to get Sophie ready for school, because you got to get out the door at a certain time, I realized Matt is resisting me on getting dressed. You know, he'll get up and take his nighttime diaper off, and then he was just running around the house naked. And we were in that interaction where I'm like, Matt, get dressed. 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 And we went back to this instead, where, you know, I catch him jumping on his bed without any clothes on, and I put him in a timeout, which just kind of helps him collect himself, and then back to, okay, now Matt, get dressed. And I might have to do that two or three times in the morning, but it's better than constantly nagging at him and yelling at him. So I actually have a video from one of the first times we did this with Sophie.
Putting your book away?
Yeah.
What's down the front of you?
What happened?
Something caught.
Yeah.
Monday got carrots.
Yeah, your carrot came up, didn't it?
Can you say hi to my class?
Hi, class.
So you gotta win. When people saw that video, they were like, wow, you're so patient. And I was like, I wasn't patient, I was competitive. It's like, you are not gonna win this, I'm gonna win this. And yeah, she puked on herself because she was crying so hard. She sucked up so much air that she puked right down her front. And I'm starting to think, oh my God, she puked. What do? I stop? But then I thought, if I stop now, she's gonna know that every time she pukes, she's gonna get out of whatever she doesn't wanna do. And I'm like, I've gotta win. She's not in any danger. It's just a little bit of carrots down her front. She's fine. And then, yeah, afterwards, she was totally cool. She was really sweet with me. She went to bed and was fine. So that stop, pause, redirect, the best thing they point out in the book is once you start the stop, pause, redirect, you can't stop in the middle. Otherwise, it just strengthens the child's resolve that they're going to win the next time, too. But, you know, we went through several of those with Sophie. That one was almost an hour and a half. The next one was an hour. The next one was 45 minutes. You know, I would get a book out, and I would stand there and read the book as she was throwing her tantrum. But we won through with her. And with Matt, you know, he's not the type to throw tantrums, We use timeouts or putting them in their rooms a lot. This is especially effective for fighting. All right, I remember seeing a fight between Sophie and Matt that if I hadn't seen the beginning of it, I would not have realized how much kids poke at each other and instigate each other. And they'll go, go, go until one of them loses it and does something wrong, and you discipline that kid, but the other kid's like, awesome, because they're the ones that provoked their sibling into doing that. And so when I catch the two of them fighting, I don't try to figure out who did what or who's at fault. If there's hitting involved, then that kid gets disciplined for the hitting, but both of them go into timeouts. On different sets of stairs, we actually sometimes have to have Matt with his hands against the wall, because otherwise he'll scoot down the stairs and, you know, be playing with stuff by the end of it. But, you know, 3-4 minutes just to get everybody to calm down and to cut it out. Also, putting them in their rooms, they do have like a quiet time, nap time every day, which is an hour long. They can do whatever they want in there. I don't care, as long as they stay in their rooms. But the other thing we'll do, if they are just crazy out of control, they'll go back in their rooms. I don't care what time of day it is. Sometimes they'll get up and be really just unpleasant in the morning, and they'll have to go back in their rooms for kind of a restart. And they'll spend 15, 20, 30 minutes in there. And it's a way for everybody just to settle down, get some time to collect ourselves, and then they can come back out as long as they're being pleasant and relatively under control. I always felt bad about doing this, because am I rejecting my kids? Am I damaging them in some way? Am I indicating that I don't want to be around them? And my husband's like, I think they like it better. Just put them in there. It gives them a chance to settle down a little bit. And so we use that. Spanking. For defiance, this is probably one of the most controversial ones. And that's why it's helpful to read some books on this, to hear some authors argue why it's good. One thing Dobson points out is that by removing spanking from the discipline repertoire, it leaves parents without an ultimate defense against misbehavior. And for defiance, what does that mean? Well, my son very kindly provided me with an example yesterday that I could use. I was in the back room. I had a hat that was up on the counter. It's a straw hat, and so we don't let the kids play with it because they'll probably break it. And so he walks back, and of course, because he's not allowed to play with it, he immediately wants to play with it. So he picks it up, and I said, Matt, put that down. And he put it on his head, and I was like, Matt, put that down. And so he took it off his head, kind of put it on the counter, and then picked it back up, put it back on his head, and I was like, Matt, put that back on the counter right now. And so he picks it up, and he throws it down the stairs. And I was like, oh, buddy, that's a spanking. And so what we do is we take our kids into a private room, so it's not in front of each other, because of course the other kid's like, oh, I really want to see this. And so we cut the other kid off. But also, if there's anybody at my house, I don't want to embarrass my kids. And so I take them into another room. We go bare butt, because otherwise it just doesn't hurt, and it's got to hurt for it to be effective. I've spanked my kids before, and they look at me like, whatever. And so that's completely ineffective. And I put them over my knee, and I go 1, 2, 3 on the bare butt. It's got to hurt enough to make them cry. The skin will turn a little bit red. We're not doing anything to like damage our kids or leave permanent marks or anything like that. That'd be way over the bounds. But, you know, that's how we handle it, and then we give him a hug. So I did that, and he cried, and he let me hug him, and then he stood up, and he looked at me, and we have this thing that we call testosterone jaw, where his jaw went out, and he's looking at me, and he grabbed my arm with both hands, and he twisted it. And I was like, oh, buddy, that's another spanking. And so, you know, that's really where it comes in, is it's not just for misbehavior, although running out in the street or hitting are two things that we spank for, even if they're just doing it without trying to be defiant. But that defiance, where you ask them to do something or tell them not to do something, and they look at you, and they're like, I'm going to do it, that's the type of thing that you have to move in immediately on, because that's where they're asserting their authority and asking you if you can stand up to them. And because my kids are still little, this is something that we use. And it's really effective. You know what's crazy is my kids are actually really sweet to me after I spank them. You know, because the will has been broken at that point, and so they feel free to then move towards me. You know, they're still a little bit upset afterwards sometimes, but then, you know, the rest of the day with him was way better than before that. And so sometimes I'll actually see a bunch of misbehaviors, and I'm like, I bet you we're building up to this. But I can't spank him for some of the things that he's doing wrong because it's not defiance, but I'm like, we're moving towards this, and it'll actually be easier once I spank him because then the limits will be back in place. I think this can only go up till a certain age, You know, once the kids are 8, 9, 10 years old, it's too humiliating for them, but with little kids, this is really effective. I like this quote from Susan Yates, who wrote a book, And Then I Had Kids. She had 5 kids, and 4 and 5 were twins, and so she knows a lot about parenting. And she writes this, she says, some parents have found a spanking spoon or a switch to be more effective than the hand. I've always used the hand because I could never find the others when they were needed. That's what we do. We use the hand, but partly because I just can't keep track of specifically what to use. The hand is always right there. But I like this point. She says, the tool does not make that much difference. The punishment does. So there's different philosophies on this. People have different opinions. I think either one is fine. Unfortunately, some have taught that spanking is unloving and unwise. In fact, it's just the opposite. A 2-year-old will not fully understand adult reasoning. He's not supposed to. He will, however, get the message that the spanking will bring. His bad behavior brought unpleasant consequences. Spanking is helpful because it clearly communicates, it's swift, and then it's over. When it's over, a big hug offers reassurance. Spanking can be a positive force in teaching self-discipline and obedience. Our children know when they're disobedient, and a swift spanking may be painful for the moment, but it's also temporary. A swift consequence enables the issue to be forgotten and prevents resentment from being built up, both on the parent's side and on the kid's side. So we spank for defiance. We hug immediately afterwards to let them know this is because I love you. And kids can tell the difference between hitting and spanking. You know, that's the main argument, is you can't tell your kid not to hit somebody and then turn around and spank them. And it's like, no, your kids are really smart. They're going to be able to tell the difference between just hauling off and hitting someone and getting a spanking. And that's why you never spank in anger. There are times when my kid needs a spanking, but I'm really mad. And so I forego the spanking because I know it's going to be out of control and it's going to communicate the wrong thing. And so out of love for my kids, you know, that's where the timeouts or the time in their room gets to be really helpful, because you need something. But sometimes you have to decide not to spank because you feel yourself just getting too angry and worked up. Now the question of discipline in public, oh, that gets tough. There was one time we were at a playground. I was asking Sophie to get her shoes on. She was throwing a tantrum. She picked up the shoes. She threw them at me. I was like, I would spank at home. And I had gotten really good advice that you can't be different in public than you are at home, because otherwise your kids know as soon as they go out in public that they can get crazy. And so I spanked her. And I could have been reading into this, but I'm pretty sure that when I stood up that every single other mom in the playground was just staring at me. And it got really quiet. And so I just loaded my kids up in the stroller, and I walked home, and I burst into tears. And I was like, that was terrible. I'm never doing that again. So you kind of got to decide ahead of time how you're going to handle it. If there's a way to pull your kid into a private place, if you need to spank them, that can be good. Another thing we do, it's called the shoulder pinch, where if your kid's doing something that you just do not want them to do, you kind of grab their shoulder and you can press your thumb into the back of their trapezius muscle enough so it hurts a little bit, and then they realize they have to stop doing whatever they're doing right there, otherwise they're going to get in trouble. And in fact, my son will look at me and go, is that a hand spanking, a shoulder pinch, or a bare butt spanking? And I'm like, you are gauging right now exactly what you're going to get. But the shoulder pinch can be effective in public because it's a little less obvious, but it's still communicating, all right, stop this right now, cut it out. So that's up to you to decide how to do that. But then a few final things. One, apologize to your kids. I think parents are afraid of doing this because they're afraid they'll lose respect, but it'll actually gain your kids respect. So if you discipline ineffectively, or if you just sin against them generally, if you could admit when you're wrong, it'll help them admit when they're wrong. And not only do I say, I'm sorry, which it's really helpful practice to be able to say that to other people, to be able to apologize to my kids, but then I also ask them, do you forgive me? And I give them the chance to say yes. And so they're learning both how to say, I'm sorry, and how to say, I forgive you, which I wish I'd learned those words when I was a lot younger. So you can apologize to your kids. You can connect with your kids. This will actually lower the need to discipline. Daily connection is really important. Part of the reason kids fight with each other is actually to get the parents' attention. And so I had a circumstance Monday night where there, you know, the days that Scott teaches CT are always a little bit crazy, and Monday was just insane, out of this world. And so finally at about 7 o'clock at night, I was like, all right, we've got about 45 minutes left to manage it before we head down to CT. Let's just go outside. And so we get outside, and Matt promptly throws a stick, which hits Sophie in the face, and I'm pretty sure he threw the stick on purpose. And so he got a hand spanking at that point, but she's crying completely out of proportion to the actual offense. And I'm like, all right, everybody in their rooms. And so they're in their rooms, and I thought, I think it's because they feel disconnected from me. And so about 5 or 10 minutes, they're in their rooms, and I was like, you guys should come out of their room, your rooms. And so they come out, and I'm like, let's go in the back room. And they're like, where is this going? Not feeling too sure about this. And I just sit down on the couch, and I was like, you guys just come sit with me. And so they sat there with me, just up against me. We were like puppies, just piled on each other. And I could just feel their little bodies relaxing against me. And everybody just settled down, and we were quiet. I got them to sit there for like 10 minutes with me. And then Scott came upstairs and was like, okay, it's time to go. And so I was like, well, let's get our shoes on. And they're like, oh, but can we snuggle after that? I was like, no, we're going to head to CT, but that was great. And it really, it just calmed everything down. And so sometimes I forget to, you know, connect with them. And part of it's because I feel alienated from them because of discipline. But taking the time to connect actually helps lessen the amount that we have to discipline because they're responding to me. And also weekly time with each kid. We're fortunate that we have just 2 kids, so it's actually easy to schedule where we trade off with each other. Every week I get time with Matt while Scott gets time with Sophie and vice versa. But just finding a way for at least a half hour every week to focus in on just 1 kid so you can get to know them, this will also help. Talk to other parents. Even if it's not to get advice, it's really helpful to talk to somebody else and have somebody else go, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, I'm not the only one that doesn't know what to do in this situation. But it's helpful to get other advice. Although Swihart and Cotter have this really good point, they said, to judge the merits of someone's pronouncements about child rearing, use what you see in families that are doing well. Everybody's got opinions, but you gotta look at the fruit of their parenting to determine, is this someone that I wanna listen to or not? Do they have trustworthy advice? And finally, you need to be under grace. This area God will use to grow you because you're gonna fail a lot. And here's what we're going for. World's okayest mom. You know, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. Your kids are going to drive you crazy. You're going to get it wrong a lot of the times. But God's grace covers this. He's going to teach us a lot through this. And as long as we're open to his leading and his teaching, you know, we hope to be the best parents we can be so that we can eventually turn our kids over to God more directly. So, that's what I have. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Okay.
I was just going to say one of the things, there we go. You know, I've heard a lot of these, but mine are 6, almost 4, and 1, but I know that waiting out a tantrum like that is not something I was good at because it always felt like, oh, I must have picked the wrong discipline or must have, you know, expecting those immediate consequences. And it's definitely a reassuring thing to know that you can wait it out and that can be the right thing. It's just let them throw that tantrum because I think we do expect those more immediate, like if I pick the right right choice, then somehow in 5 minutes they'll be going, oh, okay, yes, I'd be happy to put my clothes on and put my shoes on.
Yeah.
They never do. So
funny how that works.
Yes, but, you know, I think that's really encouraging, especially because I know there's lots of people here whose kids' oldest is, like, even younger than that, and be very, very helpful.
Yeah, so. That's a great point. And, you know, it really teaches us a lot about patience, too.
Hi, thanks. This was really helpful. I had a question about my son's 16 months old. Well, and I don't know, like I start seeing some kind of toddler-like behaviors, but I don't know when is too young to start doing timeouts or spankings. And do you just have any like advice or ideas about that?
Yeah, 16 months, a lot of redirection at that point is good. If they're doing something dangerous, like my son started reaching for sharp things and reaching for the stove at that point, and so hand spankings can come in really helpful then because it's, you know, a quick way to just say no. But timeouts, the biggest thing about timeouts is that age is you just have to keep putting them back in the timeout until they stay. And you're not expecting them to stay in the timeout for very long. If they can sit there for 30 seconds, then you're doing really good. But that's probably the most effective thing at that age. We did not start spanking until our kids approached about 2. Because younger than that, a little bit younger sometimes it's okay if they're like especially strong-willed or getting into things that are really bad, like, you know, insisting on running out in the street. But I think at that age, the timeouts are probably one of the best things that you can do because they hate sitting still. They hate being told no in any way. And so, but the hardest part is you just have to be consistent with it and just keep doing it over and over again so that they see that they're going to be forced to obey you at that point. Mm-hmm.
I just had a question about spanking, and do you give your kids a warning? So do they know? I assume they know, but how did you do that to let them know if you're defiant or if you're hitting or kicking or hurting somebody? Can you just explain that a little bit
more? Yeah, that's a good point. The first time they misbehave in a specific area, they do get a warning that that's worth a spanking. But then after that, there is no warning. I got the really good advice that you don't count to 3 because your kids can count to 3. And so they know exactly how long they have before you move in and discipline them. And so now if they hit someone or if they run out in the street, that's immediate with no warning because they kind of know they're not allowed to do that. But with the defiance, the reason you don't need a warning there is because you're asking them to do something over and over again and they're kind of standing up to you. And so at that point, kind of like with the hat yesterday, I never told him, if you don't put the hat down, you're going to get a spanking. But it was like, I've asked you to do this, and you're refusing to do it. And so now that's the type of thing that's worth a spanking.
Okay. I've said this before here, but I really like Love and Logic for the very similar issues with how to go about discipline and the practical matters of it. And going along the same lines of the spanking and most other things for timeouts and things along those lines, you know, they also say, like, you can give the warning the first time, but you're also going to be misjudging how smart your child is and really being condescending to them as you prepare them again and again and again for this discipline when really they know and they can learn. And so to instill that confidence of, oh, I can learn and I can figure this out on my own, I wonder why every time I put my hand towards the socket, my hand gets smacked. You know, like when I do, oh, is this it? And you can see in their eyes, my youngest is like, watch this. You know, she's 19 months old. It's like, no, I'm sorry, that's just not going to work out for you. And it's immediate. Discipline. And then the other book that I've read that you were talking about as far as like understanding our culture, it's funny, it's another from the French perspective. It's called French Kids Eat Everything by Karen Le Bignon, B-I-L-L-O-N. She takes the viewpoint of trying to get her kids to have a healthier diet. But it is a really good, in general, how we go about parenting in the American culture and how exclusive it is and how lonely it can be because no one says anything to anyone else. Mm-hmm. Like, that's so cliche. But in France, it's like everyone who is a mother can tell any other kid, I'm sorry, that's not going to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to get in my purse? This is my purse. Thank you. Like, that's not an option. But it's really good because it also then helped me figure out how it is that I'm like what kind of boundaries to set. It simple things for food and but then those things can be applied to other scenarios inside the home.
Yeah, I really liked the Bringing Up Baby book. I thought it was a great book and really helpful. And just to have somebody outside of American culture kind of critiquing can really help us. You know, critique some of the own messages that we're getting right now. So cool, that's a great recommendation.
Oh, yeah. All right, I had one. My son has been through lots of different transitions and I just got married. And so I try to like make too many excuses that, oh, he's transitioning or he's 3 or all this stuff has happened. And now I'm like, okay, he needs to be discipline. So I really like the stop, pause, redirect, and then I like trying to maybe use a spoon for spanking to try to reintroduce that, because I think I've tried everything. It's got confusing. But the one thing I was like looking forward to was like, oh, you're going to go to your room. But he loves his room. We don't have any toys in there. We just have books. And now he like wants to stay in his room and read books. And so now I'm like, is this working, or am I, like, yesterday we were talking about, like, private parts and not to do something, and it's public, so you need to go to your, like, don't come around mommy and do that, or whatever. Just a new thing we're trying to learning. And so he got mad at me and stomped off to his room and was reading a book, and I was like, well, I don't want him to not understand what I was talking about, so then I try to talk to him. And I'm like, I don't want you to think mommy is mad at you. And then he gets mad and then takes his head and busts it into my face. And I'm like, here I'm trying to, like, talk it through. And then I end up going to my room and bawling. And then my husband had to step in and try to time out and other stuff. But I just feel like I want to send you to your room, but then you love going to your room. And so now I'm kind of like,
yeah.
I don't even know what to do.
Right. We use sending them to their room not as punishment so much, because I was the same way when I was growing up. Like, fine, send me to my room. That's where all my books are. I'd rather be there anyway. We use it more as like a reset. So if everybody's getting really riled up and really emotional about stuff, let's just everybody go and calm down. And my kids, I think, do have fun in their room. Sometimes they throw a tantrum in there. My daughter, we now have a limit where she's not allowed to strip everything off of her bed, because she would go in there and, you know, there'd be sheets everywhere because that was part of her tantrum. So she does get mad sometimes, but other times she's like, cool, I get away from this crazy three-year-old who's wailing on me, and I'm totally fine with that. And so for punishment, it's more the timeouts and the spankings, whereas the room time is kind of the reset downtime where they can kind of get time to themselves, if that's helpful at all. Okay, cool. Yeah.
My daughter's going to be 2 on Saturday, and we have this tantrum meltdown. It happens quite often, and it's the same thing, where she wants to sit in our car and sit in the driver's seat, move the steering wheel, put on the seatbelt, push the buttons, and if I try to open the door and get her out, just close the door. And it's when I am not letting her do what she wants to, and that's when the meltdown starts. We get into the house, and it's like I cannot comfort her, and how, like, would this situation be like a stop, pause, and redirect? And, like, what would I redirect her to? And how do I control that meltdown?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, we deal with that with our son all the time. In fact, when we got into the car Monday to go to CT, I turned the key and the car went, because he'd gotten in the car and turned the lights on. And so he almost drained the battery. And so, like, one thing I actually do with him is he does get a spanking for getting into the car, partly because last summer he disappeared for a period of time. We couldn't find him anywhere until we found him in the car drenched in sweat, because the car gets so much hotter than everywhere else. And so he was actually in danger at that point of going into heat stroke, because we lost him for like 20 minutes. And so if there's a danger factor, then, you know, that's where I think the spanking comes in. But with the redirect, it's you need to get out of the car. And then if you use the stop, pause, redirect, it's you just sit there until the tantrum stops, because that's really what she's doing, is she's getting mad that you're not letting her do what she wants. But then the redirect is, let's go do this other thing instead. And so
even then, she just doesn't want to do that other thing.
Yeah. Is she still throwing the tantrum at that point?
Yeah,
that's actually where the pause comes in, is you wait until they're calm. And it really, I mean, like I said, it was an hour and a half for the first one we ever did. But if you kind of wait through it and wait for them to settle down until they're ready to do the other thing, then you've kind of won that battle at that point.